You're listening to the Fringe Casting Couch.
Welcome to the Fringe Casting Couch, the world's only show where people sit on a couch and record a podcast about the Capital Fringe Festival. I'm Chris Klemek, the editor of Fringe Worthy, the Washington City paper's Capital Fringe blog. If you got a big, let me search it to find out how hard I gotta work. And here's what happened. Since we don't have a dedicated space at Fort Fringe to record the podcast anymore, I've been relying mostly on a handheld digital recorder this festival. And the thing is pretty erratic. It results in a lot of embarrassing situations where I am turning it on and turning it off and taking the batteries out, putting them back in, and telling my very patient interview subjects, this doesn't usually happen, it's not you, I just need a minute. But on this particular evening, the evening of Saturday, July 19th, it worked pretty well, except for the first part. I was excited to welcome to the Fringe Casting Couch, and here's why I'm playing the sexy Missy Elliott, Twana A. Hines. Twana is an internationally syndicated sex columnist and sex educator. She writes for Metro International newspapers. Her writing has appeared in the Huffington Post, in the New York Press. She's been on NPR and CNN and Sirius and Al Jazeera. Her website and her Twitter handle are both Funky Brown Chick. Her show in the 9th Capital Fringe Festival, her Fringe debut, is I Fucked Your Country. It's a show that, if you read the Washington Post, you would be under the impression is called If Your Country. Rachel Mantufel, my good friend, a member of good standing of the Fringeworthy Action News and Commentary Squad, wrote the review for Graham Holdings. If Your Country. It was very favorable, very admiring. As was the review we ran on Fringeworthy, using the show's correct title, written by Janelle Walker, who is the other guest on the Fringe Casting Couch tonight. Janelle has been blogging prolifically for us, but she is also a playwright. She's involved with Blind Pug Arts Collective. Their show is Tame. It's an update of The Taming of the Shrew. You'll hear her talk about that a little later. Anyway, so I welcome Twana and Janelle. I had them both introduce themselves on the mic, and for whatever reason, just that part of the recording was damaged. Just the tip. Sorry, that's how the conversation went. The rest of the interview, thank goodness, was preserved intact because we had a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it. I started off by asking Twana, whose show is in part a sex ed show for adults, how she decided to enter the Capital Fringe. And how she calibrates her sex ed for adults. The show is partially about her personal history, to use her phrase, sleeping her way across Europe, but I wanted to know how you make a sex ed show for adults without making it too pedantic. Here is Twana.
Yeah, I've long believed that we have to have sex education throughout our lives and have age-appropriate sex education. So that condom demo is called the triple X-rated one. And so it's a way of talking about sex in a way that's appropriate for grown-ass people, because so often we talk about it to our friends, but we don't really have education, like, at an adult level. So that's really the impetus for this show. I thought we should have a show where we reach adults where they are and have fun with it. So it's not just sex ed in the sense of you're going to learn how to put on a condom. That's in there, too. You're also going to learn about all the delicious cocks that have been between my legs, and that's been a lot of fun as well.
So to return to the sex ed blushing part of it, for I'm sure that's audible. Do you ever worry about your audience finding it, I don't know, condescending isn't the word, but like too basic or something, you know, when you're telling them this is how you use a condom?
You know, and that's a very good question. It's like you're never going to have, and I've been an educator for almost 15 years, and you never have a classroom where everyone's on exactly the same level. And so what you're doing is you're kind of preaching to the choir for some, And then others are like, oh, I didn't know that. And so what the thing is, it's like you hope that throughout the education, you're getting different people with different information. So for you, your takeaway may have been like, oh, I didn't even know that you should fold that in half and check for air. Right? And then for others, it may be like, hey, I really love that whole idea of like hiding a condom on your body and making using a condom sexy and saying, you know, like, when you find this condom hitting on my body, we're going to fuck like rabbits. Like, a lot of people might like that too.
That was a helpful suggestion. Why Capital Fringe? I know you talk a little bit in the show about how you just moved here from New York, but I know you do have to register for the festival several months in advance. So can you talk about how you became aware of it and decided this might be a good platform for you?
Yeah, so I just moved here from New York City, and I left New York, and then I ran away to Italy with this guy, which is in the show now that I've added more sex, thanks to the delicious Janelle's suggestions. You know, and a funny side note, which is relevant, though, I was afraid moving from New York City to D.C., that D.C. would, like, not be ready for a show with too much sex in it. So I was trying to be very, like, you know, governmental town. I'm going to make this appropriate, and I won't tell too many sex stories. And then, like, what I got dinged on from everybody was, like, more sex, more sex. It's like they were chanting it from all the different media outlets in D.C. saying...
We were actually chanting it at on my show. Yeah, yeah.
Like, literally rallying around with pitchforks, claiming more sex, more sex. So that's what I gave them. Yeah. And so the way that this all started, back to the beginning, left New York, ran away to Italy with this delicious little creature. I have a thing for like dark-haired guys with accents. And I came back and I decided to move to D.C. And in a way, it felt like I'm starting over. Like nobody really knows me in D.C. And so I thought I'm going to do this festival thing. I'm way better at telling stories that are serious than writing them. And there's some serious moments in the show. So there's gravity. It's not just like, yay, fucking, even though that's there too. And so I'm better at telling serious stories. So I thought I need to do a storytelling kind of thing where I can do sex ed and be funny and lighthearted, but also be serious too. So I reached out to the Fringe people pretty much shortly after I moved here. I didn't know anything about the festival. They said there's like 150 different people or something. So I'd like, I'll just kind of quietly sneak in here with this show that nobody will see. So if I fall on my ass and totally fuck it up, like I haven't made too much of a like embarrassment of myself. And so then like the Washington Post reviewed it and you guys reviewed it. And I'm sitting here on this podcast and I just feel so incredibly grateful that I've gotten such a warm welcome into D.C. This is my creative debut. This is me. I'm losing my virginity of sorts to the people of D.C. And it's been so good for me, you guys. Thank you.
Well, even if it's by accident, you did sort of slide like right into the Fringe sweet spot where it's a solo show. It has fucked in the title. I think that's really it. I think that's kind of everything.
Succeed, yeah. Really.
You know, and it's funny because I asked them, I said, well, I went into problems because like people won't post my posters or people won't want to talk about the show or things like that because I have the word fucked in the title. And they told me there was a show called The Motherfucker with the Hat, like last year or the year before. And so then I knew, oh, well, I can at least say the word fucked. Like, yeah. There's been a bit of censorship with it, though, because some outlets won't print the title. And I had a welcome cake, you know, the opening night party. We had a huge sheet cake, huge fucking cake. And we had the poster, you know, the logo and a picture of me, Sex Ed for Adults, superimposed. And when my assistant went to go pick up the cake, it was blank. There was nothing on it. And we said, oh, but we talked to you guys. We're here to pay. You know what it's on, stuff like that. And they told you, no joking. We have the transparency with what you've asked us to put on. So we printed the transparency. We have your cake ready. You go put that transparency on somewhere that is not in our store because it has a dirty word. So the assistant, being the wonderful person she said, is the dirty word country? So we paid for the cake and we put the transparency on ourselves. It's like we're adults and that's the whole point. We should be able to talk about sex. We should be able to talk about how to give a better blowjob. We should be able to talk about the things we've done in bed without feeling a sense of shame or that this is something we can't talk about in the company of other adults. So super excited about the show. Super excited people are coming. Super excited to talk about it. It's like orgasmic right now.
So why did you decide on D.C.?
You know, and I thought I would go to Chicago. I mean, I love the Midwest, like down-home, wonderful human beings. I'm a Midwestern girl through and through. And so I thought when I left New York City, I would go back to the Midwest. But then after being in New York for so long and living in Europe for a period of four or five years total, I think the East Coast is good for me in the U.S. It's very international. It's very open. And I think for right now where I am in my life, You know, the East Coast is good. And you guys have so many delicious creatures in this city, too, I have to say. D.C., you're doing a good job.
Well, when did you move here? How long have you been in town?
I moved here late October, November, and then I don't like cold weather, so I've only left my apartment in March.
In my article, I brought this up. I was wondering what you thought about Hobby Lobby v. Burwell, Burwell v. Hobby Lobby, because I know that that was fresh on my mind when I went to see your show, and I was thinking so much about how great it is to hear someone talk about their experience with sexual awakening in Europe versus their American sexual education and how those clash.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's like one of the many reasons I felt way more at home in Europe. In the U.S. a lot, I'm seen as a socialist, leftist, America-hating, commie, you know, like person or whatever. I moved to Europe and they're like, you're center-center-right. You're not really that progressive, you know, you believe in organized government, you believe in all of these things or whatever. You're centrist, you know. And that transfers to sex as well. I'd say that, like, the American one, as I mentioned this in the show too, only 22 of our states, plus D.C., so claps for D.C., have mandated sex education. And even the word mandate is a little bit too strong, because many schools will send letters home and say, oh, we're teaching sex ed this day. And so parents will take their kids out. And in my mind, I feel like that's a disservice. There's nothing more political or progressive. That's not teaching someone how to put a condom on is not any more progressive or a political statement than telling them they need to wear a seatbelt when they're in their car. So we're teaching driver's ed to students, and we're telling them how to put a seatbelt on. We got to be fucking sure they're going to have sex, if they're not right now, at some point. So let's make sure they know about it. And adults need that space, too. So. Yeah.
You talk in the show a little bit about your own upbringing in the South, but I can't remember what state it was.
Mississippi.
Right. So there was not a lot of formal sex education in school for you.
I had no sex education when I lived in Mississippi. The first time that I had a sex ed class, they didn't even call it a sex ed class. I was living in Illinois, a small town called Bloomington. Two little towns next to each other, Bloomington and Normal. Yes, yep. Normal, Illinois. Not much going on there, but I fucking love that place. I really do. And so I grew up there, and I had my first sex ed class there. And it was literally in the middle of school, and they just told us we're having a serious conversation. I was like, what is this about? And I just left that class feeling, we can't really say the word sex, because if that's what we're talking about, nobody's really saying it straight out, you know? And that this is something that's a private conversation, you know? And an example I always give is, if you go into your office and wherever you may be working, and someone says, how was your weekend? And you say, oh, you know, my buddies from college came down and we got so fucking wasted. And, you know, one guy like got out of the cab. We don't even know if we made it home okay. And I was like throwing up for 2 days. It's a funny story. And everybody's like, oh my goodness, that's funny. Rewind that. And you go into the office and someone says, how was your weekend? And you say, you know, I've been dating the same person, you know, for like 3 years. We've been living together. We haven't had sex for the past 6 months. And like, I don't really feel desired. Like, I want to feel hot and desired and sexy and things like that. And I don't, because they never want to sleep with me. And I came home Saturday night and we just had the most amazing sex ever. I felt cherished. I felt cared for. But I also felt just like ravished. Like, they've just took me and it felt so good. It's like, whoa, TMI, TMI. Why? Like, why is that more TMI or inappropriate of a conversation than talking about alcohol abuse? Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
well, it's a more intimate conversation. I mean, that, like, the scenario you described, that seems more like a more of a relationship talk than just a sex story, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. When we talk about relationships, my dear Chris, we have to remember that interpersonal relationships involve our coworkers, our family members, our friends. All of these things like speak volumes about the relationships we have with people in our lives.
Is it your perception living in Europe that a conversation like that would be less taboo in an office environment than it is here?
Not only office environment, but just as a topic of discussion. I think we've gotten to a place in America where sex in and of itself is seen as vulgar. Like, to talk about the word sex in open company, you know, like people are walking by, we're sitting in this fantastic location here in Fringe, and if people hear us and we're talking about food, no big deal. We say the word sex, and people look, or they turn. It's this whole, like, it's just like, oh, you know, the dirty taboo thing. You're doing something dirty and naughty over there because they said the word sex. It's like, no, actually, no, not at all. It's not inherently dirty or naughty or vulgar or anything. It's something we do. If it weren't for sex, none of us would be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it possible that, like, some of the forbidden
sex,
power...
Sex,
she's just yelling it at it. Yeah, this dude is...
aggressively not looking.
I know. He's no, you know, no, that guy's an actor. I saw the show he was in last night. I think he is trying to not interrupt. Yeah. But this is a bad cross section because these are a bunch of fucking libertine actors around here. And they've all got syphilis. So
awesome.
Now I can't remember what we were talking about.
Europe versus Europe, and then we said it's
Okay. Yeah. So the question is, so if we got over our hang-ups and could talk about all this stuff more openly, I've already decided this question is dumb, but I'm gonna press
There's
ahead.
There's no such thing as a dumb question.
No, there are dumb questions.
We're about to find out.
Yeah. How much of the excitement of I mean, not of sex itself, but of like talking about sex, comes from the idea that it's reinforcing us that it's forbidden or vulgar and we're not supposed to do it. Like we drag it out into the open, does it lose some of its excitement?
Yeah, I think there's an aspect of that. The more you try and keep something from people, the more they're going to seek it out and be more interested in it. And so I think the more we have that idea that it is taboo, you're only going to make people want to talk about it even more and do it more and things like that. Like, even think about it. It's like you probably have sex the way that you typically do. Maybe you like missionary. Maybe you don't. Maybe you like being taken from behind. Maybe you don't. But it's like...
I'm not going to tell you who's nodding vigorously. So,
like, you have different things. You have different favorite sweet spots and orifices that you prefer or whatever. And when you're with a new partner and they have a different yum that you've not yet tasted... There's something very delicious about the fact that it's different, even. Just the fact that it's something that you've not yet tried or done, the unknown or the forbidden or the taboo always brings with it this like special fruit, makes it taste even better somehow.
Janelle, you've just been nodding for like 20 minutes. What do you have to say about forbidden fruit?
Yes. What I would say about forbidden fruit, I mean, yeah, I absolutely agree with what Twan is saying. I think that, I mean, our kind of puritanical approach to sex in the United States about we love to keep it behind closed doors because on the one hand we feel shameful about it, but on the other hand we also feel some sort of, I don't know, S&M kind of attachment to it. It's our own secret little private thing that we get to do. But I mean, the unfortunate thing about it is that in our country, as it is in every country, sex is, it becomes a public thing because the results of sex, STIs, pregnancy, sexual health, those are very much out in the open and they're apparently up for debate by politicians and by the government. And I think that contrast is odd. I mean, that contrast is there in Europe too, but I think the relationship is different, no?
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like, the more you talk about sex, the more you put in the open, the less you shame and all of these things. If you compare the U.S. to like Europe, their teen pregnancy rates, for example, their STI rates, all of, and almost any measure that you would say, how is this country doing when it comes to sexual reproductive health? Europe way outscores us. They're doing way better than we are. And so it's like, you've got to say, maybe there's something to this idea of like talking about sex, like it's something normal. You know, like Dutch parent would say, you know, if my teenage daughter is going to have sex, I hope that it's in my house and it's somewhere safe and things like that. Whereas an American parent might think, if my teen daughter is having sex in my house, there's no greater measure of the fact that I've lost control of everything. It's a sense of like, yeah.
Yeah, but our teen pregnancy rate kicks ass. Like we are number one. Yeah, I mean, okay, maybe not literacy, maybe not soccer, teen pregnancy, gun violence. I mean, we have some things where we are far ahead. Yes. Like let's acknowledge that. USA.
USA, USA. Exactly. No, we totally are. It's
glad
like
we agree.
Yeah, and when you look at the bar charts, and I can give you guys this graphic if you want. When you look at the bar charts of like teen pregnancy rates in the US compared to like Sweden, like the Netherlands, like, it just pops way out there. It's like, we've got, if you want to use the analogy of bar charts as erections, we've got the biggest boner out there for teen pregnancy.
Chris is mulling this over. The boner for teen pregnancy?
Yeah, I am, because I'm trying to think of a bar chart that ascends at, like, a 45-degree angle. Like, I mean, I've seen horizontal ones and vertical ones, but...
Well,
but the bar charts that I've seen are sharply angular.
Yes.
Now, I know you're more worldly than I am. That's what the show is about.
I have a funny story about the first time I saw an erection. I don't know if this is appropriate for the podcast, but you can always.
We're gonna cut it all out.
Okay.
Nope.
You can totally cut it out. The first time, so I was Christian, 16, Illinois, and I was going to put this on the show, but it didn't seem appropriate. I have two more shows. So my first boyfriend, I was 16 years old. I had braces. I was living in Central Illinois. He was a college student. I was a high school cheerleader and all these things. And we were making out in the backseat of a car. And I'd never
seen. Place to make out.
Yeah, right? Awesome. And I'd never seen an erect penis. I tell on the show, in I Fucked Your Country, I talk about the first time I ever saw a penis, but I don't talk about when I saw an erect penis for the first time. And this was the first time. So we were making out in the car and stuff. And so we like take off, you know, our clothes or at least adjust them enough so that we can play with each other's genitals. And so, like,
hey, how are you?
See, it really works. She says, play with each other's genitals. And this guy just like, walks
said,
right
hey,
up and introduces himself. Like that. I mean, that guy, he's a storyteller, too. Do you know him? That's Reggie.
Reggie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He had a he's probably got a show this year. He had a show
awesome.
Last year.
Yeah.
But also crazy confidence. When someone says, play with your genitals, he's like, why not me?
Why
and
not
just
exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. That's how you got to live. Anyway, I apologize for, I apologize for him interrupting
me. Awesome. So, like, yeah, and so there we are, and so I open his pants or whatever, and I thought his dick was broken because I assumed, you know, they say hard-on or, like, erection or whatever, and it gets hard and it sticks out. Mm-hmm. So I literally thought, like, plank 90-degree angle, like it would stick out.
Like
and
the
I thought,
bar graph.
Yeah, like the bar graph that I just, exactly. In my mind, that's still embedded that, like, that is how penises are supposed to work. Every man I've ever been with, theirs is broken.
But I mean, in carpentry, you want a good 90-degree angle. Like, you don't want some weird kind of, like, variable,
exactly.
Like, oh, just give me a minute. But
right? But
sex is not carpentry, Twana.
So I've learned through the years. And so, like, I expected it to go 90 degrees out, and his, like, kind of folded up backwards, like, toward his belly button.
Wait, what? No, okay, it's horrifying. Like, it's a Cronenberg movie.
Well, I'm sure you've had an erection, and yours does the same thing. Like, it
2014 is going to be my year. Doing all the right things.
Right. But I can give you pointers if you need for that. But, like, so instead of going out 90 degrees, it kind of, like, tilted back up, like, straight back up at him, you know, towards his belly button, kind of, like, back that way. And I remember thinking there was something wrong with his penis, like, that maybe they were all different or something, and that his somehow, like, kind of twisted that way or whatever. But yeah, nobody teaches you these things. What did you learn about women's...
Oh, yeah, no, that's a great question. Nothing. Nothing. Oh, man. You know, you have that moment in your show when you talk about vague human development lesson, whatever the euphemism was that you guys got in school. I think ours actually was sex and human development, so it did have the word sex in it. But we absolutely did the thing where they passed out the index cards and had you write down your questions.
Wow.
And I remember in sixth grade, my question was, I think it was like whether you could get pregnant from oral sex. I was definitely related to oral sex. And... like, I remember Mr. Kukulis, like, just looking at the card and looking at me and being like, yeah, we can't answer that. And I mean, they had explained that there was a very specific curriculum and, like, some stuff would not be coverable. And they would just tell us if it was not something they were allowed to discuss. But I actually remember submitting the question, though I don't remember what it was exactly. Like, I remember twice. And I remember, like, Mr. Kukulis was a little irritable the second time. Like, he was like, I already told you, we can't talk about this.
Wow, that's
right.
Amazing.
So since I have a internationally syndicated sex expert here, I want to ask you, can you get pregnant from oral sex?
Let's think. What?
I mean, me first. Can I get pregnant from, and then tell me you.
You personally can't get pregnant from oral sex.
Okay.
Yeah, women cannot get pregnant from oral sex unless, what would have to happen for you to get pregnant? You would have to, no,
You'd
like.
You'd have to be spectacularly bad at it.
No, I was thinking like if you, because some people don't know, for example, you can get STIs from toys and like different things. And so I always think like, what is the one, like if someone says, can I get an STI if I haven't had vaginal intercourse or whatever or things, I think, what are the things people may not be thinking about, for example? Like, yes, you can get it from toys. Yes, you can get anything you can get in one orifice, you can get in another one. And so you can get chlamydia, for example, in your mouth and throat, and gonorrhea in your mouth and throat. HPV, yeah, exactly. And so, like, I was thinking, what would someone be doing to, like, get, you'd have to, like, I'm trying to think creatively if there's something that you would do that would possibly make that happen, but it would have to be so far out there that it wasn't at all related to
it. Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking for reassurance here. Like, I don't want to have my imagination further skewed.
Are you afraid of knocking someone up? That's what I'm hearing.
I'm a man. Of course.
Awesome.
I mean, we're told that abstinence is the only 100% effective, but like, what if it's not 100% effective? What if it's only 98% effective?
Awesome.
What am I going to do then?
Oh, man. Are you abstaining?
No. It's terribly personal. Boy, just because I put a microphone in your face and ask you questions. I don't know. Ask Janelle something personal.
Oh, dear.
Ooh. What's the one thing that none of your sexual partners knows about you that they should?
Knows about me? Shit. Whoa, that is a serious question. My parents are on the internet. Jesus, that's a really big question. Do you mean like sexually or just like in general?
Anything.
I'm really afraid of mascots. I don't think I've ever told any of my sexual partners that. Yeah. That was like the only thing I could think of. Like, what would I not tell someone?
That Baltimore Oriole. Just with that look in his eye.
Well, I mean, like, that could be important because, like, what if they're really into, like, you know, the furry subculture, and then I have to be like, well, you know, like, no, because I'll cry. Yeah.
There you go.
So there you go.
Yeah. Not into furries.
Well, okay. And that's something that that none of your partners knows, that you dislike furries, because they were all furries and you didn't have the heart to tell them this is really not for me.
Everyone, I had to just say sorry. No, I just don't like your hair.
Yep.
Bye.
I didn't like your orange hair all over your body.
Oh my God.
Fozzie.
Awesome. Oh, man.
What are you doing here? Janelle, would you like to tell us about Tame, the play that you've written for the Fringe Festival this year?
I would like to tell you about Tame. Tame is an adaptation of Taming of the Shrew. It's set in Louisiana in the 1960s. It has been called a Southern drenched clockwork orange, which I will steal from the DCist because I think it's a great description.
Okay, I need to tell you this.
Are you trying to figure out what that means?
No, but I wrote there for many years. It's just DCist. There's no article.
There's no the.
Just DCist. Yeah. There's no the.
Yeah. This is blowing my mind right now.
Yeah. So if you want to impress a geek,
yes.
When you're talking about Batman, refer to the Batman. Like a pretentious person, when you're talking about dance, you know, refer to the dance.
Gosh.
I am an aficionado of the dance. But DCist.
No.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I never knew articles had such impact. My God. Yes. So Tame, which does not include an article.
The Tame. Your
Tame.
Show, The Tame.
The Tame. The Taming of the Pug, as we call it on Twitter. It's presented by Blind Pug Arts Collective, which is my company, my producing company. It's a dark piece, but it's I've been told it's very interesting. I find it interesting. It's about feminism and a little bit of S&M, something you'd be interested in, Tuana. I would love for any of our listeners to come out and see it for our last performance on the 25th.
Wait, why are you presuming that Tuana is interested in S&M?
Oh, I don't know. Something she said about ropes, knots, I don't know. Something I'm presuming. I'm sorry, Tuana.
Just because she has like a ball gag in her mouth right now. You're inferring a lot.
It's the handcuffs, it's the gimp mask. I don't know what.
Incredible diction with that thing in, by the way. You would not even know. I mean, her elocution is spectacular.
Clearly a veteran of the ball gag, so.
All right, so Swan, I think you told me earlier you have not had an opportunity to see anything else. You've been focused on your show, and so you haven't had a chance to sample the other 139 or so shows in the festival.
Yeah, so Sunday, tomorrow is my day to kind of go through the catalog and pick out stuff that I want to see. I already know Tame is on my list. I already have tickets to A Fire in the Water, which when they told me that their hashtag was Gay Greek Gods, I thought, I'm so there. So super excited about that. Dateline Macbeth looks interesting. Macbeth retold as a Dateline episode. Who else? There's a bunch of stuff. Who else am I thinking? Relationship. I don't know much about it, but the title alone sounds interesting. Who else had dating kind of things? Those are the ones. Refresh. There's a show called Refresh something.
Yes, that was the other one that I was kind of looking at as a maybe for tonight, because there was an 11:15. I think it was the show that started the latest tonight, and I think we're past that now. That got a pretty favorable review. Not like a rave, but generally favorable review on our site. Joseph Price wrote. Camilla Domonoski was very, very enthusiastic about Fire and Water. That was actually the first review we ran this year, I think.
Ooh.
So
you had them before I'm going to have them.
Yeah. That's right.
Mark and Uteri, I was there first.
So I don't know if this is your bag or not, but I really like The Tournament, which is, and I am on friendly terms with some of the people in this company, I should say. But this is, I have not. But I actually know them because of my ex was in a show with a couple of them, so I met them through her. It's totally irrelevant. I've slept with none of them. But I slept with my ex.
There you go.
Totally did. Don't let anyone tell you different.
This is my favorite interview.
We're keeping that part. Theater company, it's people who specialize in stage combat, a bunch of fight directors who are used to getting to come in and do their 5 minutes and, in other shows. And they just wanted to make their own work and kind of showcase what they can do. This one is kind of a parody of martial arts movies, specifically 80s Jean-Claude Van Damme type martial arts movies. Yeah. So it's really funny. Even if you're not someone who's into martial arts, it's hilarious. And it's not just really convincingly, dangerous looking, well-performed stage fights. There's a lot of slapstick involved. They manage to tell a story while they're simulating fighting. And the jokes are really good. So that's up tomorrow night as well. So I give my endorsement for The Tournament.
I love martial arts. I actually interviewed JCVD for a film.
Really?
Yeah,
no
I love. I.
What is he like? Oh my God! Tell me everything about him hitting on you, please.
There is never enough time.
I love him. I totally loved him. He was so great. I interviewed him for Huffington Post. He had a new film out called JCVD.
I saw that. I really thought there was going to be a renaissance after that because
yes!
he was great in
yes!
that film.
Yes, I loved that
movie.
He
has that monologue
yes!
in the middle that where
yes!
we that where autobiographical.
He talks about,
thing. Yeah,
yes!
and his parents are in it.
I love.
I actually thought that there were going to be a renewal of interest in him,
yes.
and didn't really happen. But,
I was
but
sad
I didn't
about
like
that.
Movie a lot.
I loved that movie. I love him. I love martial arts, especially the Seagal, the JCVD, that whole era of Chuck Norris. You had Rambo. You had all these different. I loved those movies. So it's I'll have to check out The Tournament if it's kind of that. If it's a throwback to that, I think I would enjoy it a lot.
I promise you that you will. Okay, so let's have Janelle recommend something to you.
Let's see. Well, the last thing I reviewed, which I absolutely loved, I think was definitely top of my list as far as musicals, was You Or Whatever I Can Get from Flying V and Disco Jesus. We talked a little bit before the show. It's great. It's a song cycle that is about dating right now on the internet. So definitely, I would imagine you have a lot of thoughts about that. It's great. Hits on a lot of things. Lots of great music. Reminds me of Kerrigan Loudermilk, if you know those folks. They compose kind of contemporary musical theater.
I had to Google it. When I was editing your view,
I'm so impressed. You had to Google one of my things. That's crazy. My boyfriend told me that too. He was like, don't write that. Nobody knows what that is. And I was like, these are theater people. They'll know all of the obscure references. Well, I'm sorry. Sorry, the three for loop there.
I'm like 67 years old, so I do you.
Yes. Yeah. Representing for the young folks. Haha. Yeah, definitely go see it.
Cool. I'll check these out.
Good. Okay, so that's the tournament, and you or whatever I can get.
Okay.
Anything else you wanna plug? You plugged your show. Any other shows that need a boost besides Tame from Blind Pug Arts Collective?
Right. Let's see. What else did I want to plug? I mean, I do love the folks over at the tournament. Kyle Encinas and I actually went to college together. Good folks over there.
Oh, wow. Did you sleep with him? Sadly. No.
You know what? So I've seen two of his shows now, and I interviewed. He wasn't in the interview that I did with him this year, but talked to him last year for the podcast. I think I'd probably sleep with him.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's not like the best looking guy, but he's a funny writer.
Goes far.
Not like my first choice gender, maybe, but like solid second choice. And his mind is very sexy.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening out there, Kyle Encinas, you were the sexiest Mercutio I've ever seen. Throwback to AU 2009. But I would also plug The Program Assistant by John Kreisel. He's a good friend of mine, but he also is like a whip smart playwright, really young, writes about young people in DC. So if you want to go for a very local DC oriented show, learn a little more about town.
Yay.
Good for that.
You guys are wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for these recommendations.
Of course.
All right. So what would you like to leave the button down, career obsessed, repressed people of Washington, DC with, Twana?
I would say let your freak flags fly when it comes to sexuality, because I have not been here very long, but I've met quite a few kinky people here, and everybody's kind of doing stuff on the down low. And so I would say, you know, like, come out. And that's the lovely thing about, like, starting to talk about sex and things like that. You realize anything that you may be feeling or thinking or whatever, there are other people who feel the exact same way. So I would say that's the first thing. Second thing, obviously, I'd say a huge thank you to everyone in D.C. I feel like I've had such an incredibly warm, creative welcome here, and I'm so grateful for that. So thank you to everyone in D.C. who's come to see my show, who's followed me on Twitter and talked about it, who's written about it, who's helped me out with the show. I've had amazing people on lighting and sound and put up with me when they said stuff like, when I said, I don't really do scripts, I just kind of just tell stories, you know, it's about my life. And my lighting designer was like, you will be standing on stage in the dark if you don't put something on paper. So, yeah, it's been great. So I just love DC so far.
Yeah. It's Twana Hines. Her show is I Fucked Your Country. You have two more performances, I think.
Yeah, two more. Yeah. So yeah, I have one Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. And then I have a nice climax finish on Sunday at 2:30.
Outstanding. Any thought of continuing this outside of Fringe?
Ooh, so we'll see. I love Fringe. I know that I will at the very least be back and see tons of shows. As far as whether or not I'll put a show in next year, this has been way more work than I ever could have imagined. I feel like my life went into a whirlwind between fundraising for the show, putting on the show, friends coming in town to visit the show. It's just been like, ah! And so I went out to the tent and I was telling someone that, and he's like, welcome to Fringe. This is what theater is like. And so it's exciting. As exciting as it is, it's also overwhelming, it's also rewarding, so just feeling a lot of, and that way, it's a lot like sex. A lot of different emotions, a lot of different things.
A lot of goddamn work.
Yeah, but it feels good at the end.
Super expensive.
We gotta talk, you're having some.
You get really sweaty. Janelle.
Yes, Chris.
Janelle's show is Tame. Two more for you also?
We just did our penultimate show tonight, so the last one is on the 20th.
Good word. Penultimate means next to last.
That's the one. Thank you. Yes. So come out and see it on the 25th. That's the last chance to see this gruesome, bloody Taming of the Shrew adaptation.
The 25th is actually the penultimate day of the 9th Capital Fringe Festival.
Well, ain't that a coincidence? Ooh. Come and take advantage of the coincidence, y'all.
Oh, shit. You know what? We basically invited Twana here for one reason, because Janelle thought we should have you say something dirty in Dutch.
Nice.
And yeah, like we've been talking for like 4 hours now, and we haven't done this yet. So, all right. So can we make such a request of you? Would you consider it vulgar? Would you consider it untoward?
No, it's not vulgar at all. It's like, because say you have a Dutch lover and you need to know how to tell them what you want to do to them, and also to understand them when they say what they want you to do to them. So I'm happy to help in any way that I can to help share some Dutch expressions with you. Okay, so I'll just give you, so first one I would say is the word lekker. It's L-E-K-K-E-R, lekker. And you usually use this if you're eating something that's very delicious. And you love the way that it tastes, and it's better than delicious. It's just like fucking amazing. It's just, oh, this dinner is fucking amazing. You say, oh, all my eating is heel lekker, like lekker. And it's just, it makes you feel good from the inside kind of thing. And the funny thing is, in Dutch, you use this word for people, too. And so you can say that Janelle is lekker. And so, yes. Yeah, so you can use the word to describe people, too. And
yeah, Janelle is blushing now.
Yes, or you can say that Janelle has a very lekker kunt, which is she has a very delicious ass. Like, yes, so you can say that. So lekker, you can say. And so not only is it, like, descriptive of people, it can also be descriptive of the type of sexual activity you're going to perform. In Dutch, they make things very easy, whereas other languages have, like, 500 French verbs or something like that. The Dutch equivalent only has 200 French verbs. Like, you don't say, for example, I dropped something or something fell. It's on the floor, doesn't matter. There's only one verb for that in Dutch. It either fell or you let it fall.
They have one word for snow, but 47 words for cunnilingus. It's an incredible language.
So they have like, they have this way of dealing with the language. And so for example, you don't throw in verbs to describe what you're doing. So tennis is a verb. I tennis, you tennis, we tennis together. Likewise, blowjob is a verb. I blowjob, you blowjob, I am going to blowjob you. And so you can use that word lekker with blowjob to describe how you're going to give the blowjob. Yes, yeah. In Dutch, you would say, ik ga je even lekker pijpen. I am going to, just a little bit deliciously, suck you off. Ik ga je even lekker pijpen.
So what percentage of the Dutch language would you say that you have just taught us there? Like low 30s?
I'd say you're good to move to Holland.
And off we go.
Pana Hines, Janelle Walker, thank you both, ladies, for sitting on the Fringe Casting couch. Please keep reading Fringeworthy and listening to the Fringe Cast. We will see you at the tent.
Yay, thank you.
You're listening to the Fringe Casting couch.
Ik ga je even lekker pijpen.